Welcome to Seagull Eagle, the podcast where two rivals meet, Crystal Palace and Brighton. The clash nobody asked for, but we won't shut up about.
This week at Brighton, a late win against Brentford thanks to one of our own and a Flying Dutchman.
And this week at Palace, we travelled to Wolves, put on a classy display and took all 3 points home with us.
Plus, we'll go over all the latest club news and previews the upcoming games for Palace and Brighton.
This is Seagull Eagle.
Hello, Andy.
Neil, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, actually. Thank you very much for asking. How about you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you.
Back off from your little travels that you've had?
Yeah, I've been out in the snow.
Been out to, is it Lapland? Is that
right? Yeah, I've been to see the big man.
Ah, how was he? Was he all right?
He was all right. He said
Roy Hodgson, you mean, yeah?
Yeah, very good. No, he said I was still on the right list. So, it's all good, mate. All good. Back home now and caught up on all the football news. So, looking forward to going through it all this evening.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, look at both of us, a little bit smug. Both of us with 3 points. It's a nice feeling, isn't it?
I think more so, look at the league table. I mean, we're both getting nosebleeds right now, aren't we? It's a bit much, isn't it?
I mean, there's so many points on offer from every team at the moment. It's so tight, but still, it's a nice feeling, especially yesterday when the games actually ended and Brighton, I think, were fifth. You were what, fourth?
We're fourth, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's a nice feeling, absolutely.
And mate, a third of the season gone now, right? Because I know, like, we were joking, and I was obviously joking with you about five or six podcasts ago when we were sat there in the top six and you were like, yeah, wait and see. And obviously, we are now a third of the way through that season,
yeah,
officially,
a fair point, mate.
Right?
Fair point.
So you look at a third of the way through the season. Generally speaking, the people that are up there remain up there or thereabouts.
Yeah.
There doesn't tend to be too many dramatic changes. So I know, obviously, Christmas is probably the next indicator, isn't it?
Yes, because there's so many games, I suppose.
But you're right, though, Neil, because one game can take you from fifth to about 13th or 14th, like 3 points, that is not much in it, really.
No, absolutely. I mean, I tend to not worry too much about the table. I try not to get too overexcited because it doesn't really matter until we get to about May, does it?
But says to the man who just told me where you were in the league.
Just saying. Right, where should we start?
I think we should start with your game because obviously at half time I was looking forward to this podcast. At full time, not so much. Tell us all about it.
It was the archetypal game of two halves. It really was. Let me just start by saying a few things about the lineup before I get into the actual game. Because
did he play the same team?
Well, I think he tried.
Okay.
So we had one slight injury in the middle of the week, apparently. Lewis Dunk had a bit of an injury with his heel. Although there were conflicting reports that he either had a heel injury or he had sickness. So who knows? But there were a few different people for different reasons saying that essentially he couldn't start. He wasn't quite 100%, but he was on the bench.
Oh, I hope he healed soon.
Well, he did because he came on at half time. Yeah, no,
it's fine. Okay.
Okay. But what it did mean that obviously there was therefore one enforced change. Boscagli came in for Lewis Dunk, his Premier League debut.
I was going to say he hasn't played yet, has he?
Well, he's played in the Cup, but no, you're right. He hasn't played in the Premier League. So it was his first start, first few minutes at all in any Premier League game. So I was looking forward to seeing him play.
Okay.
I think a lot of people have been wanting to see what he's made of. The other good bits of news were that both Gruder and Jack Hinshelwood returned to the bench. And that made a big difference in the sense of quality from a bench point of view. So the other thing obviously to note was that Hörsler himself was suspended from the touchline due to Palace fanatics last week.
Why is it their problem? What?
Well, because he got booked his final booking to get a suspension against Palace.
Right. Okay. So the other two yellow cards that he got are irrelevant.
No, totally irrelevant, Andy.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. I'll be honest. I did enjoy seeing him in the stands there. It was quite funny. And also, obviously, he sat in the stands and it was, what was it? I think there's an interesting stat about this game.
Right.
Because he made history becoming the youngest manager to reach 50 Premier League games at the age of 32 and 269 days. But obviously, because he was a naughty boy, he had to sit in the stands and do that.
I find those sorts of things weird, though, those sorts of stats, because it's like, Well, yeah, he's the youngest Premier League manager. So there's always going to be the next stat that says he's the youngest too. And it's like, well, yeah, obviously, because he is the youngest. So.
Well, yeah, but I mean, let's be honest, mate, reaching 50 Premier League games, it isn't a prerequisite, is it?
No, like, so that's a very good point.
People actually don't even reach 5 games sometimes. Yeah, so I think 50 Premier League games at the age of 32, I still think it's absolutely outstanding and astonishing that you've got players in your squad that are older than him. It still just blows my mind. So fair play to him.
No, okay, fair enough. Well, congratulations, Fabian Hörsler, for getting to 50 Premier League games. So we get to the first half of the game, and I think the first half reminded me a lot of the Manchester United game earlier in the season when we went to Old Trafford.
Okay.
It was a really frustrating watch, that first half. We started off the first 5-6 minutes, as we always do. We had a little bright spark, you know, that little burst of energy. And I thought, oh, maybe. But no, the passing was really poor in the first half. We didn't really make many breakthroughs into the Brentford box. It was the same old, really, that we've seen before this season, which is, you know, possession, got the ball, moving it around a little bit, nothing really up front, not penetrating in any way.
But that's what Brentford do, though, right? Do you remember when we spoke about the Palace game? And it was like, it's proper annoying to watch against Brentford, because they don't let you through. They win the aerial duels. They're great in the air. I think we described them as the BFG, didn't we? It was they're a mad team to play against in that respect. They're doing all right, you know. So,
going into this game, because there wasn't much between us, as I said last week. So I knew it was going to be tough, but I don't think it was all down to Brentford. I think a lot of it was down to us just the way we were like. Right at the beginning of the season, as I said before, I felt like every little pass was just slightly off, you know, like not quite matching up. And it felt like that again, Andy. And that's a real frustration when you're watching it, especially when...
Pleased to hear it.
Well, I think there's something I probably should say, which is, I suppose you have to consider the fact that Brighton started this game without Hörsler on the touchline and without their captain as well. And I think that probably does have an effect a little bit, you know, when you're first starting out on the game, trying to work out what to do, how to do, and what the opposition are doing and all that sort of thing.
But then there's the other piece of information that you normally throw at me, which is that, you know, Brighton don't particularly tend to be them best selves in their first half of a game.
They really don't.
So I'll be honest. I mean, I've sat here and listened to this quite a few times now.
It's Groundhog Day. It really is.
It's first half, not great. Got through it unscathed, or maybe not too badly damaged, I guess. And then second half, got it over the line. Not got away with it, because you always do so much better in the second half.
Yeah, no,
it's
totally
almost
true.
Like you just take a little bit too long to warm up. But anyway.
I think you're right. No, I think you're right. I think the only highlights, really, I would say for the first half were Minté was always the bright spark. I think Bascagli actually made quite a few good passes, looked good. I think because he's naturally left-footed, there was a different way of playing slightly. You know, you're not sort of looking for the defender to sort of be awkwardly moving around onto his right when he's on the left-hand side like that. So I think he played pretty well for his first Premier League game. Having said that, I think it will take him a little time to adjust to the pace and the power of the game, especially coming from... I think it happens a lot with any Dutch player that comes from the Dutch league. I think it does take them a little while to get used to things.
Going back to what you said about Minté, though, I do like watching him. I really like watching him. He's so exciting.
Yeah.
And that his runs and the skills and the... And it feels like he's got that talent, but he also does do the pass. He does do that final ball. I think in some instances he passed it to the wrong person.
Well, I think, you're right. I think that when you watch highlights of Minté, I think it's like, wow, this is a hell of a player.
Ask me to watch the whole game.
Well, that's my point, though. When you see a whole game of him, you see just how many times he's not quite with it, not quite on the right same wavelength maybe as another player or whatever. But he's so young and he is so exciting. You're quite right.
How old actually is he?
He's only, I think he's 21. So, yeah, I mean, he's still got a long way to go.
I really thought he was older than that, to be honest with you, without any kind of previous background knowledge of him.
No, he's definitely been our best player all season so far.
I love watching him, mate. I hate to say it as a Palace fan, but he's probably the only, like one of the only ones that I take into the team from excitement points of view in terms of game changers. Lovely, it was lovely to watch in that game that I endured.
Well, to be honest, I felt like I was enduring the first half. I think the only highlight of the whole first half, or low light from a Brighton point of view, was obviously the penalty to Brentford. So
yeah.
Quick ball through, I think it was Thiago who sort of got hold of the ball, passed it through to, well, an on-running Ouattara, who was steaming into the penalty box. And, I mean, Carlos Baleba, where do I start? So he's done the hard work of realising there's a runner, getting over there. You know what I mean? Like, he's done all of that.
Yeah.
And then the choice of going to ground on a soaking wet ground and having to, I don't know, just the concept of, the mentality of what's going through your brain at that point. You don't have to slide in. You could just literally shield. You know, you're quick enough and strong enough to stop him from getting a goal, but you slide in and it makes it easy for the referee to give a penalty. It's so easy. You know, Ouattara, realistically, could he got out of the way? Yes, of course he would, but why would he? You know, he left his leg there and he went over it, and it's absolutely fine. You know, that's what happens when you make stupid mistakes like that.
It was well and truly an avoidable penalty.
Oh, absolutely, mate, absolutely. And you know, Thiago scores the penalty, and to be honest, it's just a normal day watching Albion, because we always go behind. It's just the same thing, Groundhog Day, one after the other. It really is. And it was such a dull half that I think 0-0 probably would have been about right. But because of that silly mistake, we go in one down. And then halftime comes around. What's Fabian Hursler going to do? What sort of changes is he going to make? Is he going to make a change? Or is he just going to have, you know, a word in the dressing room?
Well, someone went in and didn't come back out again, didn't they?
They did indeed. So there were two changes at halftime. One, the unlucky Boscagli, and he had been booked, and I think that's probably why he got taken off at half time. I think if they knew probably Dunk could only manage half an hour, 45 minutes, it makes sense to bring him on rather than take him off after the first half. So
yeah.
It was probably planned, I would imagine, that one. But then, yes, you're quite right, Carlos Baleba gets hooked at half time. De Kuyper comes on. So what that means is a little adjustment, where De Kuyper goes to his natural left back position. Kadioglu, who's playing left back, moves up to the left wing. So there's those two both on that left side. And Diego Gomez, who was starting on the left wing, did nothing in the first half apart from pass it to nobody, moves into the centre of midfield. So we start the second half with our captain back on the pitch, and a real strong left-hand side wing, you know, when you think about De Kuyper and Kadioglu on that side. So I think, you know, from that perspective, I think what you then saw for the next 25 minutes of that game was basically Albion completely encamped in Brentford's half. They had 80% of the possession in that first 25 minutes. So it was very clear that we'd suddenly made a change and we were right on them. We didn't create loads of chances in that time, but we had the ball and we stopped Brentford from doing anything whatsoever, which was good in that sense. So it really turned the tide of the game, so that you didn't really feel like Brentford were going to get another goal at that point. You just felt like Brighton, are they going to get lucky enough? Are they going to create something? And really, in that time, the only one big opportunity that came along was for Welbeck after a really good run from Weaver. He sort of tucked it in, Minté dummied it, and it came to Welbeck on the sort of just inside the box, and he skies it over the bar. And to be honest, at that point, I'm thinking maybe that's it. Maybe that's our one chance, because we just hadn't created too much. And then, though, we probably made the key substitution of the whole match. 70 minutes gone, and Jack Inisherwood comes back from injury into midfield, takes off Diego Gomez, who, from my perspective, had a really poor game, and I was surprised he didn't come off sooner.
Well, I wanted to talk to you about this, Neil.
Oh, yeah.
Because I heard on the stream that I was watching, and also in the press, it referred to this as well, that a small section of the home support booed.
Booed what?
When Gomez was replaced by Inisherwood.
Really?
Yep. If you rewatch it back, there was a small section of the support that booed that substitution and how wrong they were, hindsight. But it's interesting, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if they were booing that or booing Gomez. I mean, he stunk the place out. He wasn't good, mate. Like, so I don't know.
Well, that was what I wanted to ask you, actually.
I can't comment because I didn't hear the boos.
Do you think it was the decision or do you think it was the player that they were booing? Do you get what I mean?
I think it's very unusual for Brighton fans to boo a player, our own player. So I wouldn't imagine it was that. But if they were booing the substitution, that's also a little strange because they could see the player that was coming on, and that was Jack Insherwood. So
yeah.
I can't answer that, mate. I find that a bit of a strange thing. I mean, maybe it was the Brentford fans booing Gomez. I don't know. I mean, I've got nothing, mate. Sorry.
Oh, well. We'll send the investigative team down.
Yeah, we will.
Try and get an answer.
I'll find out. I'll see what's going on.
Did happen, though. Promise you it happened.
As I say, the substitution happened at 70 minutes, and I think that made such a big difference to the midfield. It really did. I think, you know, well, actually, I mean, reality is literally a minute later, we actually do get our equaliser. Great crossfield pass from Dunk to Minte, who picks up the ball out of the sky, cuts back onto his left foot and whips an absolutely fantastic cross into the oncoming Welbeck, who, I don't know if you saw the finish from Welbeck, but how he stretches out his leg and basically gets it on the half volley into the bottom corner is how he keeps control of that in those conditions as well was just an absolutely beautiful finish.
Well, it's what he does for a living, isn't it? He's just, jokes aside though, I know a lot of strikers aren't like that, but I feel like in the kind of form that guy's in, he just knows where he needs to be and what he needs to do to get that ball in the back of the net. And it's the old fashioned striker, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fling your body in the right direction and you get a touch on it. And he did it and it looked pretty as well, right?
It really did. It was just such great control. And so, you know, it was an amazing finish. We get to 1-1. I'm scratching my head saying, how have we managed to get this game level? I mean, to be fair, Brentford hadn't done much either. At that point, 0-0 would still have been a fair result, I think. Brentford made a few changes at that point, and the game then suddenly became a little bit more even. Brentford were going for it a little bit as well. Again, not thousands of chances, but it was much more a battle between the two teams rather than what it had been in that first 25 minutes of the second half. We get to about 83 minutes, and again there's this sort of like melee in the midfield, and finally Jack Insherwood gets hold of the ball and he does something that a lot of people around me had been screaming for a while, which is hit it long, hit it over the back of the Brentford. When you've got someone like Minte, you know, just hit it into the space. Well, that's what Jack Insherwood did. He pushed it straight over the top of the Brentford back four. Minte sprints onto it into the corner. And at that point, I'm thinking, okay, great. So what's he going to do? How's he going to make this work? Our players start steaming into the box. And I don't know if you saw it, but basically he goes to take on one of the defenders, goes to take a shot by sort of cutting in on his left like his normal way that he does. And the ball deflects off the defender and just rolls nicely in front of Jack Insherwood, who by this point, I mean, it's the craziest 1-2 I've ever seen, really. Yeah. But by this point, he's on the edge of the box, half volleys it into the corner. It's a bit of a scuff, but it goes in because, again, the surface is so wet, the keeper's beaten, and 2-1, and I've literally got no clue how we've managed to get in front of this game. We then are jumping around like crazy, thinking, great, we've won the game, this is great, we just need to sit tight defensively. And to be fair, we do. We start slowing the game down, obviously doing the things that we should be doing. And it gets to 90th minute. We make a couple more changes. And I think one of the people that come on is, who was it? It was Gruder that came on, and Veltman at the same time. So we really tried to defensively secure that lead. And we get to the 90th minute, injury time. I think they said 5 or 6 minutes on the clock. And I'm thinking, okay, well, look, as long as we don't do anything silly here, we'll be fine. Well, 92 minutes into the game, and the ball gets crossed over. De Kuyper is in the box with Sade, with Dunk. There's quite a few of them in there. The ball gets whipped in, and De Kuyper. This is the thing that gets me about this. So the penalty decision, the decision of penalty, I'm struggling to see where the penalty is in this one. The decision for De Kuyper to hold him a little bit, absolutely, he does that. But every defender does that. By the time the ball comes over,
it's not meant to happen, though.
It's not meant to happen, but no ref ever gives that. No referee ever gives that little amount of holding. By the time the ball gets over there, he's let go of him. No one is holding him. He just falls to the ground. And you've had it. I've seen it in Palace games where they do the VAR and they call it persistent holding, i.e. where the player has just been held on for too long and then they give something. This one, I'm absolutely gobsmacked why they gave it.
It didn't go to VAR, Neil, because I seem to recall there being quite a delay. And because obviously, as you said last week, mate, VAR don't get wrong.
The issue I've got with this at the moment is this new directive, which is that they shouldn't re-referee the game. And so there's this like threshold now where they say the referee's made a decision, and then VAR look at it and go, should we? Is that too much of a cock up? Do we need to get involved or do we not? Rather than just looking at it cold and going, would I give that? Would I not? Should I give the referee another opportunity to look at it? They look at it and go, is that unbelievably terrible? No, it's not. Okay, we'll leave it then. And I just find that sometimes a little bit frustrating. We either go one way or the other. With this decision, I was just surprised the fact that it was given in the first place, because generally speaking, you would see that 10 times in every game and it's never given.
Not only was it given, it was given, went to VAR, checked, and then given again. So I'll be honest with you, it was given
by the referee and then VAR chose not to change it.
Right, but there was a lengthy wait, though, wasn't there?
It wasn't that long. I heard the manager going on about that.
Well, I'm pretty sure that the Brentford manager had the write-up about it.
I mean, I checked
about
it.
About how long he had to wait to take the penalty.
I checked it, right? And do you know how long it was? From the moment the whistle blew to the moment Thiago put the ball down on the spot.
Did you get your stopwatch out?
I did, on purpose, because I was thinking, because I saw the quotes from him, and I was
Keith
like,
Andrews, yeah.
Yeah, ex-Albion. And I was like, this is a bit of a strange comment. It's just someone just moaning for the sake of it. It was 2.5 minutes. Does that feel a long time for a penalty decision?
Well,
two and a half minutes?
Okay, let me turn this on its head.
Yeah, go on.
If you were stood there waiting to take a penalty, and you had to wait for 2.5 minutes in an away ground, surrounded by how many people in your stadium? 20,000?
Yeah, 30,
30,000, giving you grief. Everyone getting excited about the fact that it might not be a penalty. And you've got to sit there for 2.5 minutes and wait for it. I think that is a disadvantage for the penalty taker. And I think Keith Andrews has absolutely got a point there.
Okay, so look at this another way. Yeah. Why did it take 2.5 minutes, Andy? That's the other question. So if it was such an easy decision to
probably
make
from
VAR...
Probably a bad internet connection, mate. Or something like that.
Someone's looking around trying to get free bars on their phone. Yeah. Hang on, I've got to give them a ring.
Mate, have you ever tried to get internet connection in a football stadium?
It's a fair point.
No WhatsApp in there, mate.
But yeah, 2.5 minutes. I don't know. It didn't feel that long. But the good thing was that Brighton did their job. What they did was they got round the players. They moaned about it. They pushed people. Verbruggen got booked for time wasting, standing in front of the penalty taker. There was a few people that were just basically winding everybody up on purpose, trying to put the penalty taker off.
Is why Keith Andrews was like not appreciating the dark arts of Brighton.
Well, I mean, the referee shouldn't have given such a stupid decision in the first place. The good news was that when the crowd fell silent and Thiago stepped up, Bart Verbruggen, for once in his blimmin' life, decided, do you know what? This is not going to happen on my watch. And he dives the right way, holds the ball to his chest, and he's mobbed by his teammates while the fans give out probably the loudest cheer of the day. And at this point, my nephew, who's half my size, is picking me up and chucking me about because he's so happy. So there was a lot of jumping about, a lot of people that were incredibly happy with that result. That was
so close. Like 90-something minutes?
This, by the time that was taken, yeah, we were around 94 and a half minutes of 96 to be played.
And it's a real shame for Brentford, because if you look at that...
it's not.
No, but if you look at that penalty that they took, I believe that he did that thing where he made it look like he was going the other way. And then your keeper had kind of committed
Well, yeah, so it was interesting because obviously...
He didn't change his... Do you get what I'm saying? Yeah. The penalty taker did everything right, almost did the dummy bit, and then the keeper... So to make the keeper commit, right? The keeper committed to the right way,
yeah,
but he didn't change his...
It was very interesting because obviously we had exactly the same scenario in the first half.
Yeah.
Thiago had a penalty, Verbruggen's there. He does exactly the same action and this time puts it in the... So he puts it in exactly the same place.
Yeah.
Verbruggen dives the other way, and this time Verbruggen dives the different way and goes back to where he put it in the first half.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. Thiago doesn't change his mind, even though he's done that little pause. It was strange.
Verbruggen went early.
He went slightly early. It was very clear.
Which is why he managed to get where he did to make the save, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, look, once again, your keeper's kept you in it. As he does in a lot of games, to
he
be brutally
He's definitely,
honest.
I mean, over the last three seasons that we've had him, he has progressively got better and better. This season, so far, touch wood, I would say that he hasn't really made any mistakes. You know, he hasn't, you don't look at him and go, oh no, this is the one where he's going to muck it up or anything like that. He's been really solid. Penalties was the last thing that I think a lot of people were waiting to see him save a penalty because he hasn't saved any for us at all so far. This is his first save penalty. But I'm just really pleased for him. Obviously, as I say, the players mobbed him. Then we had about a minute at most, I think, of the rest of the play where we basically just fell down and fouled people and stopped the game.
So dirty.
We
honestly,
are so dirty. I absolutely love it.
I'm watching Brighton, the more I'm just disgusted.
I'm so love it,
you're
mate.
You're that
honestly.
Dirty that your manager ain't even allowed in the dugout anymore. other managers are calling you out for the dark art. It's too much. Can't you win a game properly, mate?
Oh, don't you start. I mean? Don't you start.
Just be nice.
So look, in summary, right, a really poor attacking passing performance. We were really poor, honestly. Defensively, solid, I have to admit. We worked incredibly hard as a team. No one, I'm not questioning their work ethic, absolutely. But the ability to attack and pass effectively in an attacking sense, I think was really poor on Saturday. Trying to think of good things. Boscagli, right? So he did look good. Even though he got taken off at half time, he actually did look good. It's going to take him a little while, but I'm pleased he got his start.
What about Baleba? He had a cracker of a game, right?
Carlos Baleba, you're right. He continues to struggle, right? I mean...
Can we just go back to maybe 2 months ago, something like that, maybe, where I said to you about, well, you should have just cashed in on him, and you were like, don't be so ridiculous, his value's only going to go up. Mate, I promise you now, eat your words, boy, because his value is decreasing by every single game. When was the last time he got for a full game?
You don't listen to a word I say, do you?
When was the last time he got for a full game?
No, he's been terrible.
Poor.
He's been very poor. But you constantly think about this idea of his value. Mm. We don't have to sell him, Andy. We're not looking to sell him.
I'll be honest with you,
mate.
I would get him off your books as soon as you possibly can.
Because he's still incredibly young.
Man United still want him. Half the price, mate,
to,
and get rid of him.
No, because he won't go unless someone meets their valuation. It's that simple.
I think the only reason that you're still playing him is because you're hoping he's going to come good.
Well, I was just about to say that, actually. I think now, and you know, obviously we've got AFCON coming up, and he's our one player that will be going to AFCON, right? Mm. We've got Jack Insherwood back, which is fantastic for us. He's another option in midfield. We've now got Veltman back, fit, who's another option at right back. So there is an opportunity now to see Weaver, to see Hinshelwood in those midfield roles. Whereas we were a little bit thin on the ground, which is probably why Baleba was constantly playing. I think we do have that opportunity that we may now see him given a rest. And personally, I would welcome it. I think something needs to change and maybe it's time, but we'll see. You know, I think what got us through the game, even though Baleba was poor, even though our attacking was poor, I think, as I said earlier, the work ethic of the team was excellent. Your ability to keep going, you know, fighting from being behind again and coming through and winning. You can't argue with things like that sometimes. It's just fantastic.
You're absolutely right, Neil. You know, I also think that the other thing that I've heard that got you guys them 3 points from the words of Danny Welbeck, actually.
Oh, yeah.
That pretty much... All them players got an absolute rollicking at half time. He said that there were strong words had.
I'm sure there were, honestly.
At half time.
I'm sure there were. I think that was our worst home half, I think. I think so.
He referred to the fact that the manager or the coaches had some harsh words, but the players themselves had some harsh words with each other. So it'd be really interesting.
That's good, in some respects.
I've seen that dressing room. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
yeah. It's so fascinating that. How long until we get cameras like in to see that kind of interaction?
Yeah, I think that's true that I would expect things like that to happen, because it was such a poor first half that something needed to be done. Mm. And I'm glad that the players took it upon themselves as well to some degree. Look, just to finish off, some stats I'll throw at you. We had 64% of the possession. We had shots 14 to 10 in favour of Brighton. On target, 5 to 4. Don't forget, 4 for Brentford. 2 of those were pens as well. And I think the XG as well. I looked at the XG and thought, blimey, don't think Brentford had that many opportunities. Then realised that penalties are involved in XG. So I took the penalties out. And when you look at it without penalties, Brighton created an XG of 1.14, Brentford 0.13. They really weren't great in an attacking sense. And we just about, I would say, deserved the win because of the way we played in the second half. I'm just glad we got through it in the end.
Yeah. And I think I hate to give you credit, but 10 games unbeaten at home now?
Yes, yes.
Which is good. Yeah. And you've also won your last three league games when trailing at half time.
Yeah,
So that was, what was it? Liverpool, Man City, and now Brentford. You've gone behind and come out with points.
Just imagine how much easier it would be if we didn't concede the first goal.
Probably a good place to leave it, isn't it?
See you in a minute.
Oh yes!
So Andy, let's talk about the other half of this podcast.
About time.
Did the new manager bounce happen at Wolverhampton Wanderers?
No, and thank God it didn't. No. Do you know what? I think it's, me and you both referred to it, right? Which is perfect situation for Wolves after the international break, new manager to wipe the slate clean and come out and embarrass us. And from a Palace perspective, it shouldn't happen. The stats say it shouldn't happen. The form says it shouldn't happen. But you're still deep in your mind going, there's a very big likely chance that there could be an upset today. Away from home as well.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it just felt like if it was going to happen, new manager bounce, all the other bits and pieces, that them kids on that pitch would kind of play for their club and play for their place.
I totally agree with you. I was definitely thinking, I was quite positive, even though I wasn't last week, thinking about it after your words, I was thinking, you know what? Yeah, you know, They could do something here, you know, because the new manager bounce, and plus Rob Edwards is a good manager. He's someone that gets the idea of the dressing room. And also you've got to consider the fact that he really wanted this job. He is, an ex-Wolves player. He's been there for years. He knows the club inside and out. So I think it's something that he really wanted to do it. And therefore that makes a difference when the manager has a real sort of like, you know, a want and a desire. I'd be interested to see how he gets on over the next few weeks. But as for Saturday, probably just came a bit too early for them.
But then, and I guess there's also so many more I was thinking about this because there's so many more complexities apart from that whole kind of morale and the players playing better and with more enthusiasm because they want to be part of this new way of working or whatever. But then you also look at it and go, right, so with your game at the weekend, you were preparing for Brentford, right? So the coaches and all of the tacticians at the club are looking at how do Brentford play?
How
do they do their set pieces? Yeah. Sorry, how do Wolves play under a manager that they haven't played out yet, right? Yeah. So like, how does that work? And also, I think there were various different outcomes that could have happened in terms of how they were going to play, who was going to play, what was going to be their approach. And our history with Rob Edwards, I think he was Luton manager, wasn't he?
Yep.
And Luton did all right out of Palace when they were in the Prem. So he has been known to, you know, spoil our day.
You're quite right. It is a little bit of an unknown, isn't it, when you've got a new manager?
And I think without spoiling it, I think the that was one thing that Glasner did say after the game, which was that at half time, the coaching team came up to Glasner and said, right, now we know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Let's do this.
Gotcha.
And in terms of set pieces, the tactical team at Palace reworked their play and went for a completely different style in terms of we did short corners, all the other bits and pieces. And that's what kind of Glasner accredited the win to, which was kind of the change of tactics. Now we knew quite how Rob was going to, first name terms now, Rob was going to set their team out. But anyway, look.
Well, that's why they get paid the big bucks.
Well, of course it is. Absolutely.
So I mean, go on, run me through it.
Well, look, we've got good pedigree against Wolves, is the truth of the matter, because Palace have won 57% of all Premier League games against Wolves, which doesn't sound wonderful, but it's our highest win rate against any side in the Premier League.
That's pretty good for Palace. Yeah,
very good. So lineups wise, Gay returned to Palace after missing England's World Cup qualifiers, and of course, even more importantly, Seagull Eagle Day with a foot injury, and that meant that Camvo dropped to the bench.
Yeah, of course. Right.
Which I feel bad for him, actually, after his spectacular form, but he'll have plenty of time after January to play. Jeremy Pino, good old Jeremy. He started in the place of Lerma. So obviously, I think that was a case of the fact that Glasner suspected that we might have a bit more time on the ball and not playing against a bunch of bullies surrounded by seagulls.
You're welcome.
So I think that was a good play, as it ended up being. And the other good bit of news was that Nketiah is back from injury.
So let's talk about the first half then.
Yeah.
As you said, it's probably going to be a little bit of an unknown for Palace to try and work out how they were playing Wolves and things. But how did it go?
Well, I think we put them under pressure from the off and started strong. I think our first real chance came probably about the 12-minute mark when Saar, who's now nil, our leading goal scorer in all competitions this season, which is a bit of a strange one, made, I guess it can be described as a sharp turn in midfield. And he kind of did his thing where he powers towards the box.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I think it was David Wolf, and he challenged him at the corner of the box, and Saar went down. And it was a legitimate go down. It wasn't a dive or anything like that. And then VAR stepped in. Now, they deemed it that the challenge took place on the edge of the area rather than just inside it. And it was, to be fair, it was a close call.
It was close. I think it was the right decision, though,
I think it probably was, mate. I think it probably was. But I think one more frame either way and it would have been do you get what I mean? It's one of them. And then obviously then just after this, I think was the best chance of the half. Two beautiful quick passes involving Jeremy Pino put Mateta through on goal. Did you see this?
Yes, I did see this.
Oh my God, I've watched this six times and even after the sixth time, I was open to, for a different outcome.
Do you know
even
what went through my mind? When he went through, it was a great pass to start with. When he went through and... You know, newsflash, I'm sure everyone knows he missed it. But when he went through and missed it, I actually thought of you at that moment. And I thought to myself, this is what Andy's talking about Mateta. Although he's scoring goals, as you see him every week, you keep making the point that he misses so many. You know, he's just got a lot of chances. That's why he's scoring goals.
Yeah.
But actually, the ones he misses quite a few.
But I think the point, and I'm not digging Mateta out, but I think the point of it being is that he did the odd thing, which is that he beat the keeper, right? Which ironically is our old keeper, right? Sam Johnson.
Yes, yes, yeah.
So he beat the keeper on that one-on-one situation, but narrowly missed the far post, right? So I think he did the difficult thing. And look, it's really easy for everyone to say that on a one-on-one situation. Like, everyone expects Mateta to score that because that's his job. And we've talked about that.
Yep.
But
well,
I don't think it was quite as easy as it looked. And he did beat the keeper. And I think on another day, he would have got it in. He didn't. It is one of them things. Don't forget, he has played for France twice now and scored in both games internationally as well. So he's still scoring goals. I think he's just been given a lot of opportunities at the moment at Palace. Anyway, so after that happening, then Kamada, pretty much immediately after that, had a superb volley saved by Johnson. Did you see this one? Because this one got me off my seat.
Yeah.
Johnston, tipped it round the right-hand post. And to be honest, I thought that was a superb save.
It was a good save. I mean, it was just a strong hand to do that and not let it dribble out, go somewhere else. That was a very good, strong hand from Johnson.
And I felt so sorry for Kamada because that would have been a cracking goal. That would have been a really nice one. Then Wolves kind of decided that they might as well join in. And have a few chances.
Well, do you know what? I thought they did well. Like, in comparison to how terrible they've been this season, they did at least look like they were going to have a go.
Yeah, they did. And they did. But I don't think it was anything good enough to kind of beat Henderson. They did force him into a couple of saves
In
that bit. And then the rest of the first half from there, to be honest with you, was pretty much all Palace. Getting the ball into strong positions, but just kind of that same old story, which is like no final ball. Mm. All the great build-up, even the classy moves, the 1-2s, and you're like, oh, we're slicing them open. But you haven't stabbed them. Do you know what I mean? There's no final ball. There's no back of the net. Yeah. And it was like, so I think, yeah, at just when that whistle went for half time, you're sitting there thinking, no, not another one of these games. Another Larnaca situation where you've had all the best chances. You've got the XG coming out the roof, but just no final result. Mm. However, at half time, Brighton were losing. We still had a point. I was thinking it can't be that bad, right?
I was surprised it was 0-0 at half time, but now having spoken to you and seen the highlights, I can sort of understand now why it was probably 0-0, because as you say, you missed the opportunity to really sort of cement a really golden chance apart from the Mateta one. But Wolves tried to at least have a go, and it just looked a bit of a messy half in that sense. But the second half, I would say, was very different.
I don't know if it was a messy half from Palace. I think it was a half.
I meant from Wolves.
From Wolves, sorry. Yeah. I think it was quite a classy performance from Palace from what I saw. I just think that I think we were organised, all that. I just think you had a good save from Johnston, and then you had two very narrow misses. Mm. Which are flip of a coin.
Yeah,
and I think, do you know what? Like, we were creating chances, and Glasner would always say, you carry on playing like that, something will go in at some point. Anyway, look, the second half came, and I think, well, it was Wolves that probably came out the blocks a bit quicker and had the early chance.
They did. And to be honest, I reckon they should have done better with that, to be honest.
Yeah, I potentially agree, and that would have changed the game completely. Mm. But then the same could be said for Palace shortly after, who I think kind of... Yeah, if we were on the motorway, they'd be going into gear six at this point. Like, that was when it kind of really turned on. Chance for Saar went over the bar, which was close, after a superb through ball from Pino. Pino was lovely to watch this game. Then Mateta was subbed off.
Yeah.
And to be honest...
It was like an hour point, wasn't it? It was 60 minutes, I think.
Yeah, and to be honest, this is what I've been calling for the last three or four games. Not the bad mouthing of Mateta or the, I don't want him to play. Like, just to clarify everyone listening, I love that guy, like, genuinely. But I think what I've been saying for the last few weeks is we haven't had the option on the bench to go, Mateta, you don't have to play 90 minutes today. Like, actually, we need a different thing. Because... Mateta's hold-up play, Mateta's, kind of passing, the second balls, all the other bits and pieces that he does is brilliant and contributes greatly. But when it gets to that final 30 minutes of the game, we haven't made that sub early enough on. And having Nketiah, who has now worked out the system, has now...
Oh, you think so, do you?
I believe he has. I genuinely believe he has. And his introduction to this game on Saturday... Mm. Gave us more pace, more direct play, more, I don't know, it just felt like new legs coming off the bench with new enthusiasm and some different roots.
Well, I was going to say, he's a different player. We've always said this. And usually when we're talking about Nketiah, we're saying he's a different player and you're saying he doesn't fit in the system. If you think now that he's starting to learn what he should be doing, then that's a really big positive for Palace.
Mate, it's a massive
really
positive.
I'm confused.
Don't forget, he did work it out, mate. He did work it out and them goals were starting to flow. Then he got injured, right? All we've got to do is keep him on the straight and narrow with injuries, and I actually think he's going to rack some serious goals up this season.
Yeah.
Bearing in mind, you've got the Conference League going on as well and all the cups. So
you know the other guy that you bought?
Uche.
Yes, Uche, that's it. So is he not a striker? What is he then? Is he just
He can play anywhere across the front.
Right, He hasn't played as a striker yet, has he? Have you seen him actually play, like, swapping from a Mateta or anything like that?
He moved into a striker's position, I think, at the end of one of the games where he came on. But, mate, I mean, this is a bit of a weird one. And I haven't brought this information to the podcast voluntarily because... you don't quite trust what you read.
Oh, okay.
But there is quite a lot of rumours going on.
Unsubstantiated rumours.
Very much unsubstantiated evidence that there is a potential that he might not continue with us. Because we signed him and it was, I don't know if you remember, when Uche came in, it was alone.
Yes.
When it on deadline day and all that, and it was like, you've signed him. And it's like, hang on, have we signed him or have we loaned him? And what we've done is we've... we've loaned him with the condition to buy in a year's time.
Mm.
And that condition was about, I think, if he starts 10 Premier League games or something. And he's only had three or four appearances in the last few minutes.
Yeah,
and I think,
yeah.
Bless him, the last home game that I went to, he was sat there fully stripped off in his kit, like stood next to Glasner at 92 minutes and then he sat back down again because he didn't manage to get on because he left it too late to bring him on. So I don't think that Glasner feels like he can bring Mateta off and bring him on. Or I wouldn't be surprised if we managed to get some other people in Jan, that whether he would move on or try, or Palace would try and kind of do something.
Mm.
I trust Glasner implicitly, yeah. Right? But I do feel like the guy ain't been given a chance.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen him, you know, start one of the cup games and been given a real opportunity, because yeah. When I have seen him on that pitch, he's got the power, he's got a bit of skill.
It's just a strange one for me. Yeah, it's a strange one.
20 minutes.
As an outsider, like seeing a new signing like that, and I've only seen a few minutes of him, but the fact that he's not been playing, it just made me sort of question it. Anyway, look, we're digressing and I apologise for taking you off course there. So it's still 0-0. We're getting to what, about the hour mark now. What happens next?
Walton plays a short corner.
Oh, yes.
Like I was talking about. So we changed it all up. Walton played a short corner to Pino. He shoots. It takes a deflection. Lands for Munez. By no accident, by the way. Munez was there waiting for it.
Mm.
Who absolutely pelts it.
Yeah, he does pelt. That's a good word.
Utterly pelts it.
I haven't heard that word for a while.
That's one of my favourites.
Yeah, yeah.
Long VAR check. Everyone in the stadium woke up from the VAR check because apparently they were checking for offside on Gaye, who was in essence collateral damage in the way, but he had absolutely nothing to do with any of it. In fact, he even put his hands behind his back. He might as well have done some whistling at the same time. That kind of, you know, that kind of nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here.
Because he clearly knew that he was in an offside position. It was like, I'm having nothing to do with this. He was purely a spectator. Luckily, VAR realised that he was a spectator, and the goal stood. And Munez did a wonderful celebration, because obviously Munez left his international duty at the weekend because a close friend passed away.
Oh, really?
So he actually he attended the funeral. So he left the Colombia game.
Oh, how sad.
It was in the media, it was reported for personal reasons. And obviously no one really quite knew what was going on. If I'm honest, I wasn't actually expecting to see him in this game.
No, of course not.
Personal reasons normally means you're out for a bit.
Mm.
He's turned up, played, and obviously when he scored, he pulled his T-shirt up and whatever it said on the T-shirt was in reference to his friend, which was lovely.
Wow.
So there we go. What wasn't lovely about Munez's international break was that he did mention about the fact that he dreamed of playing for teams like Real Madrid, Barcelona and Man United.
Don't
I think
get
all
me
that
wrong.
Headering of the ball has affected him over the years.
It was noted by me.
Very
I was
going
to bring that up later, actually.
It's the second time that sort of thing's been said. But anyway, let's move on. So yes,
1-0 up.
1-0 Palace.
Yeah.
Then 5 minutes later, Walton wins back possession beautifully, and Walton had a lovely game, just gliding around, doing the things that Walton does.
Mm.
And he played a very unique pass forward into Pino's feet. And do you know what was lovely about that? Which is that 9 out of 10 other players in his position would have played a backwards pass.
Do you know what, Andy? Honestly, I'm so glad you brought this up, because it was the one thing in the whole game. Obviously, the goal is a lovely goal, yeah? And everyone's going to be talking about a fantastic finish from Pino, quite rightly.
Yeah.
But that pass from Walton, I made a note of it because I wanted to talk about it. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's such a perfect quote from you, that most people, most midfielders wouldn't have seen that, wouldn't have done that.
Or been brave enough to try it.
No, it was just, and it was quite nonchalant as well. Like
I see him all over though.
He just knew where it was.
He just looks like he needs to sit
down. Yeah, yeah.
All the time.
And it was a beautiful little pass. It'll go unnoticed by a lot of people, but it honestly was a piece of class. And I say that with all of my Brighton hats on, but it was a wonderful pass.
Well, I've complimented Mintes Day, so
yeah,
I feel like we're,
no, I agree,
you know,
mate.
And like, let's not forget, Walton's doing it for England now, right? So,
I wouldn't say he's doing it for England. I don't think he actually played well against Albania the other game. I think he found himself a bit lost, but I'm hopeful that he'll stay in the squad and get his confidence up.
His time will come.
Yeah,
his time
I
will
agree.
Come.
He's too good to miss out.
Yeah, but obviously, with that pass, obviously Pino picks it up.
Yeah.
And I tell you what I loved about this.
Mm.
It was the fact that Pino didn't look at the goal.
The goalposts don't move, mate.
Well, no, but they don't. But you need to be aware of where you are, right? And that's the point, which is that he'd already... I watched it and I played it back and I watched it again because it was such a good goal. And I was like, let's have a look at the technique. And then you could see him as Walton looks up, sees where he is, plays the ball in. As the ball's on his way to him, Pino does a very quick half glance behind him,
yeah,
which is, where am I? And then ball comes to his feet and then he literally... kind of, he takes one little touch, but still looking at that ball to work out where it's spinning, all the other bits and pieces, and then just curls it so beautifully into that corner.
Yeah.
And then to make it even better, Neil, to make it that perfect goal.
Oh, here we go. He's still going.
It hits the top bar and goes in.
Does
it's
make
the perfect.
Better.
It's the perfect goal.
Does, do you know what makes it even better than that?
Go on.
Right, and this is not actually a joke, right? Yeah. Some of those goals, they're great goals, all these types of things where you have a curling shot and all that, but it makes it even better when it's the side where you've got the camera behind the behind the player as he does it. So the camera sees exactly what it does. Yeah. When it's on the other side and he's curling it from the other side of the pitch, you wouldn't see that curl. You'd see it as a great shot and stuff, but you wouldn't feel it. So when you see it as a camera behind the ball like that, you watch it curl, you watch it go in. It makes it so much better. And you're quite right, hitting the crossbar, just a little sprinkles on top of the icing.
Well, you get the sound as well, don't you? Yeah. Like it's in. Yeah. So look, that was his first Premier League goal for Palace.
Yeah, he's got a top lap next time, blimey.
So, and I honestly, that guy is, I mean, look, he's in the Spain national team. That guy's, he's got it going on.
I agree. So that is what, 2-0? Yeah. And I mean, there's not long left after that, is there?
Nah, a couple of late chances. And by the way, the other thing to mention, mate, did you see Glasner's celebration?
I did.
Literally made me piss.
Honestly, he's like a dancing dad, isn't he? It's the funniest thing. He's so awkward.
But it was... It didn't look awkward until he nearly slid over, and then but he just... He styled it brilliantly again. And I just love his... You know that kind of like... face.
Well, it's the instant excitement, then the sudden realization that I'm a manager and I need to calm down for a second. It's funny.
And that I nearly stacked it. Like, brilliant. I mean, just brilliant. And that just, it just shows his passion for the game. It's wonderful. So yeah, look, a few late chances from Wolves in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, they tried to give it a go, to be fair to them.
And I think the one note with Lacroix kind of making this brilliant sliding block.
Oh yeah, Huang, wasn't it? It was his last effort. Like, that was
love
quite
that
good.
Name.
Huang.
Yeah, it was a really good effort, and obviously Lacroix just kind of put his body on the line of game, which was brilliant. So yeah, really really good game. I thought it was a classy performance from us. I think is the truth. So far, right? If I think you look at it, it's another clean sheet for Palace. Down to what I would describe as another defensive masterclass from our guys.
Yeah.
And if you have a look at the Opta stats, right, for best one-to-one tackles.
Best one-on-one tackles.
Right, in terms of success rate.
Right,
so there's the Opta do a percentage. Okay. Best one-on-one tackle success rate for this year so far.
Yeah.
Within the top five, there are three Palace players in position 1, 2, and 3 for that
really?
Stat.
Really? Okay.
Lacroix is top of that at 87%. Let me just take a moment.
Wow, 87% his one-on-ones.
So you're one-on-one with an attacker, going through on goal, whatever it is, 87% of the time, he wins that tackle.
Wow.
That's so insane.
That is insane, especially when everyone really talks about how great Mark Gerhe is as a defender and stuff. Is he on that list?
He's second. Oh, is he? 81.5%.
Wow, okay.
Right? So the guy that we got
two
in,
of your back three are like on one-on-one side. Wow, that's a great stat, mate. That is a great stat.
And then it gets better.
Oh, yeah, because you said there's another one.
Tyrick Mitchell's third.
He's third.
With 80%.
The actual top three of the... Wow. Yeah. Yeah, that is a good stat, mate.
And then you've got, what is it, Kenny Tete?
Oh, yeah, from Fulham, yeah.
He's on 78.8%.
Yeah.
And then you've got Polinia on 77.8%.
Yeah, so I could imagine him getting... Yeah, wow, that's amazing. 87%, though, that's...
Mate, it's genuinely insane. Yeah. But I think, and that is why, you know, Glasner talks about this whole clean sheets win championships thing.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's like, with that system and the trust, man, the trust of you've got these three players here. I mean, what does Chris Richards think about this? I mean, he's the only guy being left out. I mean, he'd be gay. What I haven't seen is position sixth below, because I'm sure he must be in that top 10. He must be, because he's had an absolute stormer of a season. But you think about that, where these players themselves, Neil, end up in the opposite box attacking half the time anyway. So in order for this whole system to work, they need to win the one-on-ones.
Yeah, right. No, you're absolutely right. That does exactly point out what this stat means, because that's the style you're playing.
Exactly. It's lovely to see. I'm sure there's plenty of other league tables where we're not top three, but I've picked the one that we are, and I'm going to celebrate that.
So look, 2-0 against Wolves, right? What are your main takeaways for this game? How do you think, when you look at it in the cold light of day now, what are you most happy about?
I'm happy that we avoided the banana skin, mate.
Yeah, fair point.
Okay. Do you know what I mean? Like, we played an unknown entity, I guess is probably the best way to describe it. Yeah, albeit, and I'm not bigging up the fact that we've just beaten the bottom team who are yet to win a game. By the way, the only team in the top seven tiers yet to win a game.
Yeah.
So, like, we can't overplay this, but look, it's another clean sheet. It's away from home. It was a banana skin, as I said. And truthfully, my biggest takeaway from it was that it was, as I've used the word three times now, I think, it was a classy performance from us, mate. We looked good. I think Pino has had his chance to shine, and we've seen what he is capable of, which was lovely. Another really strong performance from the defensive lot. Nketiah came on and had a great game. We ended the day in fourth. As we stand now, we're in fifth because of Villa.
Yeah, so right in this moment, there's only one more team that plays that could possibly change places with Palace and Brighton, and that's Man United, who play the Monday night game. But currently, Palace, 20 points, fifth position.
Yeah.
Brighton, 19 points, sixth position. If Man United win, then we'll both drop down one, basically, but still.
But we've got them next anyway, so that's all right. Do you know what I mean? We'll do them over.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, still, even in that situation, to be, even if it turns out the worst, sixth and seventh in the Premier League after 12 games, as you quite rightly pointed out earlier, a third of the way through.
Mate, it's not a bad place to be.
Bad,
and do you know what? Like, you were giving me a little bit of grief, but you looked at the stats in terms of our Premier League form, right? And you were quite right. We've had a dip because of the European games.
Yeah.
However, let's just take another little moment just to kind of finish this all off, right? Mm-hmm. So we're sat fifth in the table, one place above Brighton, 1 point in it, I think, right? So not much there. Only Arsenal, Neil, have lost fewer games than us this year.
Yeah.
Right? They've lost one, we've lost two. 20 points from 12 Premier League games, 1-5, drawn 5, lost 2. It's our best start to a league season since 2012 in the Championship. And since 1991, 1992 in the Premier League, right? That was righty and all that, probably.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And we've lost just two of our last 18 Premier League games, 1-7, drawn 9, and kept three clean sheets in a row for the first time since October 23. Like, it is, and I use the terminology nosebleed, right? But it is, mate.
You are so excited about this, aren't you?
I just don't feel like it's real, mate.
I don't feel like it's real.
We're playing Strasbourg in the Conference
League
on
Thursday.
It's not real,
mate. It's not real, because you know what's going to happen, don't you?
What, we're going to win the Conference League and end up in the Champions League?
Well, maybe. I don't think that's how it works. By winning the Conference League,
you get in the league. We're going to get in the Champions League.
You won't do both. I'll take a bet with you now that you won't win the Conference League and finish in the Champions League positions.
I wouldn't do that bit. But I think my point being, though, is that currently, sitting as a Palace fan, you're in the Champions League positions, you're playing in Europe, and you've got the best team that you've ever witnessed in your lifetime.
Mate, I don't disagree.
I cannot believe my luck.
I don't disagree with you. I can understand why you're so happy, but I can't see it lasting. I really can't.
And do you know what? I don't give a absolute flying however long it lasts. The fact of the matter is that right now I'm in the moment and I'm enjoying it while it lasts, because, Neil, it never lasts forever, does it?
No. Enjoy it while it lasts.
Well, that's the point. It's a lesson for life, mate. And do you know what? I'm going to rock up to Selhurst Park next week and watch Palace have a go at Man United. Hopefully, long may it continue.
I prefer not to speak. If I speak, I will be in trouble.
Welcome back, everybody. Do feel free to buy or not buy whatever you've just heard. God knows what it was.
I do wonder what comes onto our like little feed there and what it is each week. You said you had an IKEA one before.
Yeah, I've had IKEA.
I get like business ones constantly, or Bitcoin and all that sort of random stuff.
I think you've got to be careful if you use a VPN as well. Because you get all sorts going on.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I've had adverts in Spanish and German and all sorts of stuff. So it's exciting. There you go, listeners. Stick your VPN on and be educated. You might learn a new language. Anyway, you have got a trip to Nottingham coming up.
Oh, yes. Next
Sunday
weekend.
Sunday the 30th. Now, can I ask you a question? I don't know if you know the answer to this. And if we don't, then I feel like we need to find out.
Okay.
Nottingham Forest versus Brighton, Sunday the 30th of November.
Yes.
Palace are playing same day, midday kickoff.
Right.
But your game and a couple of the other games that would have normally been a 2 o'clock kickoff are actually scheduled for a 2:05.
Yeah, kickoff. That's a strange one, isn't it? I don't know why.
What is happening there?
I haven't got a clue. I've wondered that myself. It's just a weird time. I don't know whether they've got, I don't know, TV issues or what. I don't know what it is.
Well, here's the thing, right?
Yeah.
Normally in this situation... You Google it.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You ask Siri, you do whatever
Shall
you
I
need
do that?
To do. And I've done that, Neil.
Oh.
I've done that.
Right.
I've done some research.
Yeah.
And do you know what I found out?
Go on.
Absolutely nothing.
Oh, really?
Honestly,
brilliant.
Not a single shred of information has come my way.
First time the internet's been useless for us.
It's let me down.
Okay,
it's
right.
Let me down. In this age of AI, ChatGPT, all the other things that you might use to get the wrong information, I have come up with nothing. So, listeners, why on earth... Is the Brighton kickoff at 2:05? Do you think maybe that, I don't know, the ref for that game's gone, can't do 2 o'clock, 2:05?
I've got my nails to do. I don't know. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, anyone knows, please message in to us. Please let us know, either on X, Facebook, you know, the normal places.
And that's not just us going, oh, you know.
No.
I actually want to know. Someone tell me, please.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, good question, mate.
Anyway, that's not really what this was all about.
It wasn't.
I mean,
it's,
we need to find out. Tell us about what you think is going to happen in that game. So, Forest, are they a threat to you?
Tell us what you think is going to happen. I've got a clue how Brighton are going to perform.
Well, I could probably tell you. Dismal first half.
Dismal first half.
Pull out your arse in the second half.
Well,
and then,
maybe.
You know, get 3 points, hopefully, for you.
Anything has to be better than the last time we went to Nottingham Forest.
What happened there, Neil? What was your last game?
So, last season, we went to see Nottingham Forest. And... Fabian Hursler, in his wisdom, when he was relatively wet behind the ears in the Premier League, decided to play one midfielder. And I mean literally one midfielder. I think it was a 4-1-5 or something ridiculous like that. It was an absolute crazy formation where we didn't have many fit midfielders, so he decided just literally to play one.
Okay.
Two number 10s, a striker, two wingers, all this sort of stuff. And if you remember, Andy, I'm sure you do as you're smirking at me, we lost 7-0.
I mean, no one saw that coming, did they? But do you know what, though? Looking at it in a little bit more of a positive, and I know it's a very kind of...
Use your positive spin.
No. It's a very simplified statement I'm about to make. But given your recent upturn in playing Crystal Palace, where you managed to, you know, get a point or whatever out of us, which is, you know, historically under Glasner... has been a bit of a tricky approach for you. With Forest playing, you know, kind of a bit of a tricky style like that, something would tell me that you would go into this with a little bit more confidence, given the fact you've got a fit squad, you've worked out how to play against certain oppositions.
I mean, you're not wrong. I obviously am going into this feeling a bit better, mainly because... Hursler himself has obviously clearly developed as a manager and starts to understand how things are going. Plus,
he's only just physically developed, and it weren't that long ago since his voice dropped.
Stop it. And also, the other side of it, unless something really terrible happens over this week, we've got some midfielders, so that's always a good start as well. So, obviously, I don't think that's going to happen again, but I'm just pointing out that the last time we went, it was an absolute disaster. Now, this Nottingham Forest... you could argue is a slightly different animal than it was last season with Nuno.
They were absolutely on a high. 3-0.
Well, I was just about to say that. Now, obviously they've had a bad run and they're in a bad position, but their last five games, they've won two and drawn one. And those last three games are the two wins and the one draw. So they are literally at the point where you can see the upturn. You can see Mr. Dyche has done the Dyche effect, and they are hard to beat, and they are starting to score goals. I mean, Saturday's game against Liverpool was an absolute perfect masterclass as to how to play against Liverpool.
Very much so.
They were fantastic. So
there is one thing that is in your favour here.
Yeah, go on then, mate.
I'm sure you've probably already worked this out. But on Thursday night at 8 o'clock, Forest are playing the mighty Malmo. And albeit probably they will come out with some points on that one, the probability of them being tired on the Sunday and or picking up some additional injuries, given your lack of European football, without trying to remind you of that.
No, I'm clinging,
you definitely have the advantage here.
I'm clinging on to that, obviously, but they've got a big enough squad, and Malmo is Malmo. They should beat Malmo, absolutely.
But don't forget the fact they've got to beat Malmo. Because,
well, that's a good point.
Because they nicked our European spot and then ended up absolutely ruining the party.
Yeah, that is a very good point.
So they're going to feel, there's no way, I mean, they are going to field a strong team, mate.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a very good point. They've only got 5 points in their group at the moment, in their league, I should say, in the Europa League. So they are going to need to collect some points sooner or later. So, yes, you're absolutely right. That is a positive from Brighton's perspective. I think we have definitely got a better chance this season than we did have last season. I think, you know, obviously Brighton themselves are not doing too badly now when you look at their current form. You know, they're apart from the way we played, the actual results wise, you know, we're getting results. We're doing okay.
At home.
Well, no, even away, the fact that, you know, the Palace game, if that is a model for how we should play away from home, I'm here for it.
Okay.
You know, I'm fine with that. If that's something we should do, listen, mate, if we win most of our games at home and draw most of our games away, that's a pretty good season by the end of it.
Well, that's European form.
Oh, you would think so, wouldn't you? You know, so from that perspective, I'm happy. You know, you look at our last five games, we've actually ended up now only losing one so far in our last five games. We've won three and drawn one as well. So we're doing okay, but I keep looking at the performances and worrying that sooner or later we can't keep just playing badly, going a goal down and keep coming back, because the well will run dry eventually.
But don't forget, though, you did have two clean sheets in a row.
I know. And then they disappeared again. You know, it's
well, yeah,
not...
but I mean, come on, mate. Listen, do you know what I'm hearing? I'm hearing setting yourself up for defeat is what I'm hearing and I'm listening to. And my point being, Nottingham Forest have got a game on Thursday. They're playing you on Sunday.
Yeah.
You should be beating Forest.
I suppose, when I look at it honestly, mate, that I think anyone that supports a team, you gain confidence from seeing your team perform well. And that's where you come with confidence and go, do you know what? I think we'll beat this lot. Or we'll beat that lot. But I can't do that. I can't see a game, every game, where we play that well. So the fact that we won against Brentford is great, but actually we didn't play great. So we're still going into this game with bad form in some respects, but it's after the international break, a week on, and hopefully we'll pull something out of the bag.
We've got a whole week to prep for it, mate.
Yeah, exactly. So ultimately, I am hoping for a win. I would be very happy with a point away at Nottingham Forest.
Right, well, that's not good enough for me, mate. I want to know, what do you think the score will be?
I think the score will be 1-1.
So you're going to drop 2 points?
It's not dropping two points.
It is on the Palace Brighton situation, yeah.
Why? You think Palace are going to win then?
Yeah.
Who have you got?
Man United.
Where?
At home.
Okay.
Did you just laugh there?
Well, a little bit.
Hang on, have you seen our home form?
I have seen your home form, but I've also seen what you're doing on Thursday night as well.
What, beating Strasbourg?
We'll get to that in a minute. Okay, so you think on Sunday, you're playing Man United, you think you'll win.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to laugh at that, actually. I shouldn't laugh at that. Because
it's too late, you already have.
All right, well, look, I'll take it back. All right, against Manchester United, on paper, in the Premier League, you've definitely got a chance. I completely agree with you.
Don't forget this poor guy who hasn't cut his hair in 10 years. Like, Man United are on the up.
Man United are definitely on the up. They are unbeaten in their last five games. They have won three, drawn two. They've got Everton Monday night. That could be the next game. If they win that, that is a bit of a run that Man United are on. Plus, they will overtake both of us and then sit in fifth position in the league.
No, mate, I'm dealing with facts. They're sat in 10th. They're sat in 10th.
Okay.
And we beat them 2-0 away from home last time. It's the last time we played them. They're coming at home to Palace, who, and let's be up, right, okay. I always have to do, because don't forget, I've got imposter syndrome a little bit at the moment. Yeah. I know outwardly I'm like, yeah, we're going to win. But like, I've got imposter syndrome because mm-hmm. I'm not used to the stats being on my side.
Okay.
Right. Do you get where I'm coming from here?
Yeah.
And as Man U, do you think, honestly speaking, forget the Brighton rivalry.
Yeah.
Do you think Man United will be looking forward to going to Selhurst Park next Sunday?
I don't think anyone looks forward to going to Selhurst Park.
This is what I mean.
Even the Palace fans.
Shut up.
No, I think... Look, of course, it's a tough place to go. I just think that Man United, with a week to prepare, and the formation that they play, and the fact that they are coming into some sort of form, and the fact that, as we know, Palace are going to come into that having been very tired, having to travel to France, play a very good Strasbourg side. I just think there is an opportunity. If you're going to catch Palace, it will be this weekend. That's my opinion.
That is their opportunity. I just think that, I think at home, I think we'll find a way with Man United.
Okay. So what's your score prediction?
2-1. I think clean sheet out the window, but I think 2-1.
Okay.
I think there'll be some drama.
I think it'll be a boring 0-0 again.
Mm. Well, we always know that my score predictions mean absolutely squat. So...
Well, look,
yeah,
that's the Premier League done. Forget that. Let's move on, or almost move back in some respects, because I think there's a more important game for you lot to play on Thursday night, as we just started talking about. Talk to me. Conference League. It's probably the biggest game in your Conference League fixture list, isn't it?
Oh, not probably. Definitely.
Yeah.
They are the team of substance.
Yeah, I agree. They are a good side. Plus, they've got a lot of good backing from, obviously, they're a member of Bluco, which is a multi-club ownership, Andy. I don't know if you know where what that means, but...
It's Chelsea in disguise, isn't it?
It really is Chelsea in disguise. Yes, exactly that. And so they have a lot of really good young players. They have a very good manager.
They've got some good experienced players as well, to be fair.
Yeah, fair point. I mean, good manager, though.
Ex-Brighton. Yeah, he is. He absolutely is.
And, go on then, talk to me.
Do you want the what we've done in this situation? Because obviously it's a new thing for Palace, right? Mm. This whole Europe thing. And I can speak from personal experience that when that fixture list came out, I hadn't even heard of half of them clubs, as I'm sure the West Ham fans didn't, or you know, some of the other clubs that end up in the Conference League. So, you know, true to form, what we'll do, we'll just give you a little bit of info, a bit of behind the scenes as to what we're coming up against here. So, Strasbourg, Thursday 27th, 8 o'clock, it's away. Mm. The Palace fans were... fighting tooth and nail to try and get a ticket for this one.
Really?
And do you know what the weirdest situation was? Was that there was a glitch in the Palace website.
No! What happened?
And I saw it online. But you know, like you have the tiers that you can buy tickets
Yes,
for.
Yes, yes.
And that first tier was basically, I got a season ticket when I was 10 years old.
Yeah,
and I'm now
it.
80 and I can
Kills
manage to get
me.
An away game.
Yeah.
You're too old to travel or whatever. But in essence, what happened was is that some of the Palace fans that didn't have enough points were logging on, and they managed to refresh the page enough times and got in.
So scandal.
There's been a lot of uproar about that. But
yeah.
So in essence, there were people jumped the queue in that respect.
Right.
And it's meant that a lot of Palace fans that would have normally have gone are still going but can't get a ticket. So I think there's going to be a lot of diehard Palace fans watching in local bars and things like that.
Mm.
It was a dream. I would have loved to have gone to this, Neil. I really would. But yeah. I haven't got enough points.
Fair enough.
But anyway, look, they're sat seventh in the Conference League. They got 7 points. They've won 2. Drawn 1. They got a +2 goal difference. They've beaten. Here we go.
BK, I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah. BK Häcken 2-1, which is the Swedish league.
Obviously.
They've beaten Jagiellonia. Which is, why are you laughing on pronunciation? That is spot on.
That's Polish.
Yeah, it's Polish. In fact, they didn't beat them. They drew with them.
Right.
In the Polish league.
Right.
And then you've got Slovan Bratislava.
Well done.
Perfectly pronounced.
Almost, yeah.
2-1, which is obviously the Slovak league.
Yes.
So they're a point above Palace, who are sat in ninth. Obviously, we've won 2 and we had the slip up with Larnaca. So... what are they doing in the domestic league? Well, look, they're sat fourth in the French Ligue 1. with and they're 8 points behind PSG, right? Their last five games, they've won two and lost three.
Yes, they've dropped out a little bit because actually they were doing even better at the beginning of the season. They've had a little bit of a blip.
That made me feel better because I wasn't expecting that when I was researching it earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even when you look at the Conference League as well in their position, as you just pointed out, you know, it's I was expecting them just to romp that, if I'm honest.
Well, mate, they drew with Jagiellonia.
Well,
that's actually the pronunciation. I got it out then. Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you.
And so I was surprised when I actually did look at the table and realised how low down they were. I mean, there's still plenty of time to go and all that
also,
sort of stuff.
David, did you note, though, that 2-1, 1-1, 2-1.
Mm.
They've let a goal in every game.
Yes.
So there's no clean sheets there either. You obviously know their manager.
Yes.
Liam.
Liam Rossignol, yes, who obviously played for, well, he was at Brighton more recently as one of our youth academy managers as well. And I remember him talking before he went and got his senior job at Hull. He was on the TV at a Brighton game as one of the pundits, and he was talking. And it was when we had De Zerbi around, and he was talking absolutely glowingly about the fact that he'd spent time at Brighton with De Zerbi, just trying to understand what he think and how genius he was, and all this sort of stuff. And he struck me then as someone who's an absolutely brilliant communicator, understands the game well, and is clearly driven. And I think he's a really promising manager. I would not be surprised if he ends up being a Brighton manager at some point in the near future.
So you think someone's going to go the opposite way from Chelsea?
Yes, I do.
Interesting.
I do. I think of all the people, I think Liam Rossignol could be a Brighton manager very soon.
Okay, nice one. Here's an interesting situation that I've been thinking about this game. And, you know, because like, I don't know, there's this whole kind of outwardly facing world of football where it's like, oh, it's the big old world of football, shiny, glossy, you don't think too much about it, you just accept it for what it is. And then you start thinking into the, oh, what happens day to day, how does that decision get made, or how do they set up like that?
Right.
And I was thinking to myself the other day, Ben Chilwell,
yeah,
he was on loan at Palace last season from Chelsea.
Yes.
Ben Chilwell is in the starting lineup at Strasbourg.
Yes.
So do you reckon?
Where's this going?
Well, I'll just get this image, right? Of I don't know. You're at the training ground at Strasbourg, right? They're all having a lovely time.
Bonjour.
Bonjour. You know, they're sat having lunch, probably some nice cheese,
baguette.
Nice bread.
Yeah.
I mean, not stereotyping, no. But that is true. Nice cheese, whatever it would be. Ben sat there having a chat with his mates, right? And then the manager's like, Ben, un momento. That's Spanish. So it's like, Ben, can you come over here for me, mate? And I reckon
Liam Rossignol's English, you'll just say.
All right, yeah. All right. Oi, Ben, over here. And then Ben's like, mate, I'm eating my cheese. No, can you come over here for a sec? And he's like, and then Ben walks away from his cheese and he's like, I know where this is going. He gets dragged into the office and then Liam's like that. Right, Ben, listen, you spent 6 months at Palace last year.
Yes, right.
Right. I want you to tell me everything. And Ben's like, mate, it's trade secrets. Like, do I have to do this? Do I have to? And then, so he's like, right, set pieces. Da-da. Do you reckon that actually happens?
Yes. I reckon to a point that happens.
I bet the players hate it, right?
Well, I think...
Because that's their mates as well, isn't
it? No, I don't think that. I think the players hate it because it embarrasses them, because they stand there and go, I don't remember. I think half of them don't even take notice, but...
Do you know what I mean, though? Isn't
of
it
all
interesting?
The things to hear on this pod, I never thought I'd hear the sentence, Ben, leave your cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah. That wasn't what I was expecting or where that conversation was going.
Yeah, but these sort of things fascinate me, mate. They fascinate me because I have this at work, right? We have people that work for competitors.
Oh, yeah, it happens to all of us. Yeah, yeah,
and
absolutely.
And I'm like, tell me about this. Nice weather today. And then
really?
And it's like, I would imagine that the players probably, like, I don't know, you're talking about your mate who you went clubbing with like 6 months ago and then now you're trying to find out how bad he is at football or whatever.
I think.
Interesting, isn't it?
I think the lower down the leagues you go, I think that does still happen.
Yeah.
I absolutely think that. I think the level that we're at now, we're talking about with Premier League and Liga, the size of the clubs we're talking about, they probably don't need to have those conversations because they've got everything inside out already. But it's never... I just think lower leagues, I think that probably still does happen, mate. Absolutely. There's no resources
Ben
there.
Ben Chilwell will know how Glasner will set that team up and what instructions he would be given.
Yep.
I mean, the only great thing is that Ben Chilwell, truthfully, didn't really play for Palace that much. He was on the bench.
I think the other thing to consider is that when it comes specifically to Palace, there aren't really any surprises because you know who's going to play, you know how they're going to play. That's not the issue. It's stopping them is the issue.
Yeah, but I guess it's the philosophy, isn't it? It's the why do we do what we do and what do we do in certain situations? And it's the set piece plays. That's the bit that I think...
That's fair. That's a good point.
That's the bit that I think is the inwards thing.
That is a very
anyway,
good point.
We won't worry about that.
So come on then. It's that time again.
Right. Okay.
What do you think?
I think, given the fact that this is a team of substance...
Mm.
Oh, by the way, their nickname. Do you want to hear their nickname?
Go on.
Le Bleu en Blanc.
So, the blue and white.
Yeah.
Right, brilliant.
They could have come up with something better than that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it sounds great in French, but it's literally just blue and white.
Mm.
Yeah, move on.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that they are a club of substance, right? They've won all of the French trophies.
Mm-hmm.
Right, they've got the treble in that respect in their trophy cabinet.
Does Andy try to rev it up to make them sound even better than they are?
Yeah. Oh, mate, I mean, look, their stadium's hosted the World Cup.
Oh, my God, Andy.
They're
what's
a big
happening?
Team. They're a big team.
Prediction.
Mate, we're going to smash them 2-1.
Smash them 2-1. Is that a smash?
Yeah, because the one that they're going to score is going to be soft.
Right, okay.
It's going to be a nice performance. Trust me, I do believe, look, truthfully, you look at it and go, we've got these six games, right?
Yeah.
And I think that we can't afford to lose two out of the six because then you're in that lottery as to, like, you're probably going to qualify, but you're going to get the tougher draw. All the other,
yeah.
And obviously, I think we're going into that period where we've got all these games.
Yeah.
This is the second game out of God knows how many before Christmas.
Mm.
Two games a week, if not three in some of them.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I think you've got to win this one. Do you know what I mean? We've still got a reasonably fresh squad.
Yeah, so. I take your point. I take your point. But I mean, knowing that this is the hardest game in the Conference League that you're going to play currently, you know, in the league stage, I think a point would be more than enough, personally. I don't think that's what's going to happen. I'm just saying I think that would be enough. I don't think it would be a bad result for you to get a point away at Strasbourg. My hope is that Liam Rossini comes up with a fantastic plan and that Julio Enciso does another rocket into the top corner and they win 1-0, obviously. But my gut is telling me that I think it will be a draw. That's my opinion.
Interesting.
Hmm.
I mean, they got that Panicelli, haven't they? He's got 9 goals in 13. He's doing all right.
There's a few really good young players there.
No, there really is. Who will probably all be wearing a Chelsea shirt in a few years' time. But look, I think we will get there. And if anything, it'll be at detriment to the Man United game, truthfully. But
yeah.
I do think that we will get there because we won't be embarrassed again like Larnaca.
We will see, won't we? Right, that's it. Thanks for listening to another episode of Seagull Eagle.
Make sure to follow the show. In fact, stalk us. Because don't miss another episode, because that's just stupid. We'll be back next week to review Forest Brighton, Palace Man United, and of course, Palace's Conference League game with Strasbourg.
And you can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook and X. Just search Seagull Eagle and get that conversation started. Message us. Honestly, we won't bite.
Or you could drop us an email at seagulleaglepodcast@gmail.com or send a letter.
Yeah, that's another option. Yeah, yeah.
Send it to Santa at the North Pole and he'll fold it on.
We'll see you next week. But until then, Seagulls!
Eagles! Eagles!
Come on, Strasbourg.
Mate, we're going to smash them.